Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Good morning. This is Dr. Michelle. You are with me, Dr. Michelle, live. It's a beautiful Monday. I hope you all had a beautiful and blessed weekend. We're walking on this road together. You can call me or text 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4. Texting is something that is available brand new, so that's really cool. We also have the app store iTunes, so check that out. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So before the weekend, we talked a little bit about that more subtler form of abuse. A lot of you checked that out. A lot of you have identified. You could identify with the concept of that subtle, the subtle forms of abuse, the things that cause us to slowly over time give up of ourselves while we don't even know it, thinking and being somehow morphed or like clay, the wrong potter's hands. Like clay, we gently are formed into something by someone who, for whatever reason, has a need to control and or harm and or abuse for whatever reason. And then there are people who many of you identified, I'm that person, that you identified with that, that somehow that's a seamless response and relationship with someone who would do that, that you're kind of like somehow it works with you. And sometimes you think, why do I always meet this kind of person? Why am I in this kind of marriage? Why do I always have that kind of boyfriend or girlfriend? And we'd scratch our heads. How can I see somebody different? It might be what you project outward, and those are the people who approach you. Those are the people. It's like, well, you know what? I love that God gave me a puppy, and he is a German Shepherd, and he has a nose like no other. And a dog, especially a dog that's closer to their nature, that's closer to their own dog-like nature, their own canine, they're more raw, they're not domesticated, they're not, oh, gee, I think I'd like a piece of cake, and I think I'd like this. My particular dog, Mozart, the German Shepherd, he will sniff stuff out, but he will know what he's going for. I'm lucky in that he doesn't do the dumpster dive, as they talk about it. He doesn't go into the trash can. He doesn't, every time something drops, he doesn't just jump for it. But he will sniff out what it is he wants, what it is stimulates his appetite. So oftentimes, women who find themselves with children and find themselves either continually to reel in these relationships where they just know something's wrong, but they can't put their finger on it. And they pray and they pray and they pray and they pray and they ask and they help and hopefully they get counseling. But a lot of times there's a kind of person that is so insidious with the kind of abuse. There's almost a cliche that a lot of counselors and psychiatrists have among themselves is that in this case, let's say the narcissist, which we won't define at this moment, but there's a lot online about it, and I wouldn't get straight with the criteria from the DSM-5 gives you a great criteria of a classic definition of a narcissist. But however, there is a more in-depth explanation, a more in-depth description of a narcissistic personality disorder. I gave you a great resource, Dr. George Simon, who wrote In Sheep's Clothing and Character Disturbance. I think the book Character Disturbance. I think he was the author of that one, who describes the disturbance of a character that causes someone to be much like the dog or the snake in the way that they don't maybe even intellectually decide, I'm going to do this to this person. It's instinctual. They sniff it out. They know how to sniff it out. This is what nourishes me. This I can leave alone. So when you're in a room of women and you're 19 years old, and the one who is just like making you feel like you're next to Mary as far as women on the earth, they know just who you are, just what you, they just have a way. You met your soulmate in 2 seconds. And some people do. I'm not saying that's not, that doesn't happen. But this is kind of like the MO for this kind of relationship and this kind of person. But it's that they've scanned the room of delicacies and decided that that's theirs. They don't need that one over there. They don't need the sandwich or the cake or the apple. They need this. They need the chicken. They need the beef. They need whatever it is that their particular appetite desires. And they kind of sniff it out. A lot of you identified with that. So, oh my gosh, what are you going to do? How are you going to protect yourself against that? Well, we have lots of decades of many of us who have no clue, and we repeat the same mistakes over and over. We look at, we just find ourselves, quote unquote, or end up in, quote unquote, these kinds of relationships. And lo and behold, after so many decades, we start getting little glimmers in, wow, kind of same song, different verse of what I hear about my aunts and uncles talking about in their own families. And then, kind of like a little bit, same song, different verse, if I'm really honest with myself, what my childhood was like. This all is important stuff. Now, I'm going to take that because we did talk about that on Friday, and you can look up the archive, and you can certainly get the podcast because you're in a lot of company, both men and women, lots of company there. So we can, you can look up that, but today, I want to talk about wisdom. I want to talk about what are your excuses for not going on in your life? What things hold you down? What are the false beliefs that we have that kind of keep us looking always in the wrong direction, thinking that we're actually making headway or that we're actually can change a situation, or blaming ourselves completely, going to confession over and over and over and over again, or realizing you need to be sanctified, purified, that you just don't have enough love in you, when really you are actually being eroded. Now, of course, do we all have no culpability? Of course we all have culpability, but sometimes we seamlessly go into something and we are in the dark all of a sudden. Not all of a sudden, we've been led through in our lives in a dark tunnel, a dark room when it comes to certain abilities to be able to know ourselves enough to where we can kind of not fall for this kind of predatorial situation. And then so it just is our nature, or our second nature. It's not our God nature. It's our second nature to keep in this darkness, so that when we meet someone and they turn on a little light over here, or they recognize us for who we really are, or they appreciate our intelligence, or they appreciate our faithfulness, or they appreciate our artistic ability or our cuteness or whatever it is, we just feel like we believe everything, even though I think it was Maya Angelou who said, if someone shows you who they are, believe them. And again, and that was a variation of some other quote saying basically the same thing. It is believe them. And oftentimes we are shown simultaneously who that person is, while we are completely in love and we're working toward, we think, the same goals. We might be going to RCIA together. We may be going to pre-Cana. We may be going to premarital counseling. And we think we're all on the same page. But when you say, let's save for retirement, and they say, let's save for retirement, or you say, this is how many kids I want, and they say, this is how many kids they want, they've got their fingers crossed behind their back, but they're kind of open. They don't really mean it, but hey, if it works out for them, fine. And somehow, and those were just examples, just off the top of my head as we're coming to a close in this segment, but you have no way of knowing that. You don't know when someone's putting their fingers behind their backs and crossing them. However, there are other things that actions or statements or things that don't connect with the kind of person who would say the things that your future spouse is saying to you or your spouse is saying to you. And yet, you just are so automatically attuned to overlooking it, make excuses for it, blame yourself, become numb to it. I'm going to go through a whole list of things that you might be doing, and I want you to see if you see yourself on any of that. I also want to go into this program a little bit on forgiveness, on a thing called Enright's model of forgiveness. And I want to also talk about perhaps excuses we give ourselves once we realize what's happening and how we trick ourselves sometimes into doing things that will just make situations worse. All right, this is Dr. Michelle. You can call me 573-4BREAD-4, ask questions, tell me experiences. You can email me, DM live, breadboxmedia.com, and we will see you on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You are with me, Dr. Michelle, live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. And you're listening to some crashing. Sorry. All right. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do when what are you going to do when you have 2-3 kids at home, 1 kid at home, and you know things go well for a while, something switches. Maybe there's a text message or a couple of text messages that you're not really taking a look at, or you're being convinced that you should keep many things separate, and you don't feel right about it. Kind of makes sense, but you don't feel right about it. Or there's a withdrawal that you sense, but you can't put your finger on it. And when you say, well, wait a minute, I think we're falling apart here. I think there starts to become a little bit of an edge. Well, you're just imagining it. You're making it up. You're jealous. You're whatever. Well, you need to spend a little more time, you know. I mean, I know you need to go out and do the gym or do after work stuff or whichever situation. you happen to find yourself in. Oftentimes it's that time, a little bit time after work or whatever it is. Or maybe it's they spend a lot of time on their computer and not with the family, not with you. Little by little, year by year. And you think of this way and that way, and you're the one going to seek out. And they may even say, yeah, let's go seek out. They might go to retreats, marriage retreats. They may go to a priest. They may do this. They may do that. But you're feeling something's not right, or they're not all in. That's the important part. When someone says, I have messed up, and I am all in, and as evidence of that, I will understand that I have a lot of work to do to bring you back to be able to trust me, whatever that situation was. Perhaps a person is abusive and they just need to control you. They need to have you do the work and stay home and not talk a certain way or dress a certain way. That's a very controlling thing. Or they may erode every conversation and turn it around back on you. Or they might be having an affair. Or they may be having a female friend they do too much with, such as maybe they're both cycling enthusiast or backgammon enthusiast or whatever it could be. You know what I'm talking about. You've known people in these situations. Perhaps, as that one woman I described to you, perhaps you're doing a ministry together. I've known several people, women, who've been doing ministries, who founded ministries with their husbands, only to find that their husbands were cheating on them, were stealing, were addicted to drugs, addicted to pornography. And it's just shocking because you can't even imagine. They use the age-old, how could I even have time? Look how busy I am. I work all day, and then we do this ministry, and we do this, and we do that. This is a very common story. This is not meant to make you suspicious, but if you've had experiences, you can help out other people who might be wondering themselves. You can call 573-4BREAD-4. What is your experience? And I will also say at this particular moment, get your counseling, get your friends, pray, your priest, go to confession. However, ask God for God-given discernment. Use your discernment. Oftentimes, people, men and women, who find themselves over and over in these kinds of situations, or when they look back and they see many boyfriends might have been that way, or their parents, they were either abandoned as children, or they were traumatized as children, or they're from a broken home. And abandoned meaning, you know, maybe the parent got sick and they just could not parent. What often happens is they want someone to tell them what to do. So even if you're 38 years old, you want your priest to be able to tell you what to do. You want your priest to be able to say, it's because you don't love enough, and here's how you could construct your world to love better. Or you want your friend to be able to say, hey, this is what you need to do. You need to, let's go shopping. Let's do this. Let's do that. Or you want someone to tell you what to do. And actually, if you really check it inside, well, 9 times out of 10, what you really want is for someone to tell you it ain't so. Someone to tell you that because this is what, as we talked about on Friday, abusers do. This is also what neglectful parents might do, or addicted parents, or parents who have one or the other personality disorders or a character disturbance. That anything you see has to be wrong. So you don't ever rely on yourself. Right now, stop. Just stop. Right now. Right now, don't think of anything. I'm going to ask you a question. I just want to, the first thing that comes into your head, who do you trust? Okay, besides God, who do you trust? I want you to come up with at least 5 people. And if you can only come up with 1 person, okay. All right, got him? Were any of those people you trust you? It should be an easy question. And I would bet that you didn't come up with you as one of the people you trust. Now, many of you, probably there are, that would say, yeah, man, I trust myself. And you're not in these situations, or maybe you are in these situations and you know what to do. All these, you can't pick out how this is going to come about and happen. Or maybe you say to yourself, well, I used to be that person, but I'm not that person now. I used to trust myself. I used to go to God. I used to know my way. Doesn't mean you were right. Doesn't mean you were a great person all the time. Doesn't mean you weren't naggy, or you weren't this or that, or you weren't critical, or you weren't mean sometimes, or you weren't gossipy, or whatever vice you want to point up. Maybe you were addicted to something at some point. That doesn't mean any of that. A lot of times in the abusive situations, you get hung. And what do we read about in Lent? That's just what the devil tried to do to Jesus. And that's what the devil tries to do with everybody, is try to get you hung up in the snare. That means stumble over your own feet. So it's like, well, yeah, look at what you used to do. Come on, really? Why would you think bad of somebody else? Well, you're not thinking bad of somebody who is harming you. But you're afraid to go there. So we're going to talk the rest of this program about ways to identify. Because number one, you have to identify. And as I said before the break, it might be a good time to go start looking at a counselor. Perhaps it's time to do a recovery group, a codependent group, an Alcoholics Anonymous group, sometimes. But you have to really kind of be guided in that one too. But a nice objective third person, because we're afraid to a lot. We're afraid to admit it, especially if we have tried to follow a devout life. We're afraid to admit it. We're ashamed that we could possibly be in this kind of situation. And that's another foothold, holding that shame against you, keeping you caught in shame. And you make excuses all the time. Well, maybe when this gets better, that gets better. Maybe when there's more money in the house. Maybe once the business gets going. Maybe once school is over. Maybe once the kids get older. Maybe once I'm not so tired. All these things. But if you really distill it down like a big distiller, if you've ever seen a distiller, I used to have one. You pour in the water. It's a kind of a big tank, and it starts boiling the water. There's all this steam, and there's a little tiny skinny pipe. And at the end of the little skinny pipe is where all the steam goes down, comes a little drop of water. It takes about 8 hours to get a gallon of water. So what is the drop that, after all this fog rolling around in your life, the drop that distills out? Where are you in that? So we're going to talk about different coping mechanisms that are a little maladaptive you might have found yourself doing. And some of those, as I said before to you, can align to where you can fool yourself into thinking, well, that's just being pious, or that's just being a good Catholic, or that's just being a good Christian, or a good whatever, a good follower of God. And we can actually trick ourselves and end up being the furthest away, way further than we think we are. So when we return from the break, you can call 573-4-BREAD-4. You can text any experience you've had. What happened when you woke up? What happened when you opened your eyes and saw, you know what, I need to change? You can also email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you're on this road with me, Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, DM Live, breadboxmedia.com. You can check out the Podbean at the podcast at breadboxmedia.podbean.com, or you can get the app through iTunes, and that kind of lets you have access to just about everything you're going to ever want and need. And you can also listen to live streaming as well at breadboxmedia.com. So you got lots of ways to plug in. All right. So before the break, I'd mentioned some things, some coping mechanisms, defense mechanisms, just some natural, seamless go-to, default settings. I like to think of them as default settings. You know, when you reset your phone, you like wipe everything else out, no matter what you've put in there, no matter what you learned, no matter what you collected, and you go back to your default, what it came with the factory, how that phone or that computer came from the factory. So I like to think about that because our factory were our parents and their parents and their parents and their parents and their parents. And when you have parents after abuser and cheater and alcoholic and this and that, and it's not just a genetic. You are not condemned by your genetics. So when we go into these things, I want to reassure you right now, I'm going into a lot of these things to awaken you. But to dwell there, and believe me, I've had a lifetime not only of dwelling myself, but we're taught when we're diagnosing and when we're looking, because we have to do that. So we get a good, accurate diagnosis. But as physicians and as psychologists and psychiatrists, we're taught to dive, put on our little snorkels and get in there. And it's important because if you're running around in some kind of murky soup and you need to rescue yourself or be rescued or have assistance being rescued, well, you know, we got to figure out what we got going here. What kind of murkiness is there? What do we have to prepare for? And it makes sense of everything else. So that's why it's good to name it and to define it. But then you don't want to stay there forever because then you just keep reliving it over and over, as we talked about being in the graveyards. So right now, first I asked you, like, who do you trust? And if you can't think, somebody ask me that question. That's why I'm asking you, because I thought, oh, well, I named a bunch of people. And they said, what about yourself? And I thought, wow, interesting question, because yeah, I do, but there's a but to that. Wasn't the first thing on my mind. God was the first thing, though. And so, you know, there's no right answer, but you need to be in there somewhere. You can't trust yourself on everything. I'm not going to trust myself to know exactly what I need in order to get over what I think is allergies when it really might be strep throat. I've got to trust someone who is an expert. But if they tell me something like, well, it's because you have a broken leg, and I know I don't have a broken leg, well, then I go get another opinion. If it doesn't resonate, you may not like what people say, but at the same time, you do need to use the people around you. It's a necessity. It's a necessity. And if you don't avail yourself, just this little aside, if you don't avail yourself of the experts around you, not blindly, because we live in a world where everybody's an expert, and we have a lot of experts that we want to run from. We need to run from. However, if you don't avail yourself in your time of need to somebody who you trust, or at least feel you can trust, and we get lambasted all the time. We think we can trust this, you know, whoever. This teacher, this advisor, they might be well-meaning, they may just not care, and you can get really led down a road. I see this all the time with kids. Parents, my child is on the spectrum, and they're on like 10 huge medications, and they're like 7. And sometimes that might be needed. I'm not saying it's not. And always check with everybody. Never get off your medicines from something you hear on this program. We are not here to diagnose or treat or tell you what to do. Just to open the eyes a little bit, to have you ask some questions to yourself, to God, yourself, and then to the experts around you. So I was using the example of children and medication because we go to our experts. We're desperate. They're our children. We want the best for them. And then maybe they're not given the right diagnosis. It happens. I see this a lot. A lot of women out there who will be talking about their children, and they are heartbroken because their children are on 5 or 6 very strong psychotropic medications, and they are 7, 8, 9, and 10, and then all the way up and through college. And when you ask them, well, what's their diagnosis, it's vague. But we're not going to get into that right now. I want to get back to these coping mechanisms, these reset, these defaults. So many of us have just a few defaults. And they can be couched and covered by a lot of our religious, our faith-filled, our altruistic type of mandates or beliefs. We can think that we are being given the benefit of the doubt. We can think that we are not blaming someone, that we're taking it on ourselves. We can do the opposite too. But the whole bottom line is, are we walking around this fog where we are being eroded? We cannot be possibly what God is asking us to be fully, because inside that God voice inside, that voice of wisdom, that voice of intuition, that voice of the spirit saying, you've got a bushel basket over you and you didn't put it there. And you need to now that you know it though, you don't keep it there. Start the road. Fear always comes into that. So here are these reset things. Do you ever feel that you're numb? And these I got from a source, a book that is a codependency book, actually. So do you react with numbness? Have you ever noticed, if you think back, when someone, either a friend or perhaps in the family, or that your reaction to maybe some bad news or maybe someone else's problem or perhaps maybe even someone else's tragedy is you realize that you really kind of feel a little distant from it. You kind of numb yourself out, or maybe for pleasure as well, maybe for really engaging or giving yourself fully in your relationship. That you numb yourself out. I'm kind of numb to that. That doesn't bother me. You feel kind of callous, but there's something kind of not authentic about that for you. Or you ever feel that you're willing and constantly go through pain without any, you're not doing it for a good outcome, for a good end. You're not just going through the pain of having to not sleep well at night because you're going to school while you're also raising the kids. Those kinds of things, or you're working out, or you know, just name something. Do you ever find that you find yourself always in these situations that are very painful for you, but there's no upside for you? Do you find yourself excusing the offender? excusing them always. They're too tired. They're too stressed. They had a bad childhood. They were molested. Their father beat them. The father beat their mother. Their mother beat them. Somebody killed the dog. Somebody stole the family. My brother used to steal from me. My sister used to steal from me. Do you ever feel that? You find yourself also, you say, yeah, he does get that way, but he had such a bad childhood, or he was in the hospital for 6 months when he was, right after he was born. He couldn't attach, he couldn't bond. So I understand why he can't attach with me or the children and he's abusive. That doesn't make abuse any less important. Somebody who has sudden blindness in driving a car, they mowed down a family of four, you can have empathy for them because they had sudden blindness, and you don't hate them for it, but it doesn't make the family of four any less gone. You have to name it. Do you ever find yourself with displaced anger? That one more straw that you are kind of meek, let's say, in front of your husband or a coworker or a friend, and yet you get snappy and you get angry, displaced. It's called displaced aggression in a dog. They're just so angry at the other dog or the target that they're angry at. Not angry, they're not angry, but they're showing aggression because they feel threatened or they want to protect. And if someone tries to break it up or get them out of danger, they snap, or they want to get that barbed wire off their hind leg. They turn that fear and that pain into aggression, and the aggression then turns to the very person that's trying to prevent them from getting hurt further. Do you find like you just get these outbursts and you want to say, well, I'm just probably hormonal, or it must be hormones, or I'm just that person. Or you believe the lie that you're, quote, too sensitive, unquote. So we're going to get back, talk about the last couple of these on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. You can call or text 573-4BREAD-4. See you on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, walking this road together, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, DM live, breadboxmedia.com. What situation are you in? How did you wake up to your situation? Or not even so much, well, yes, how would be great. But do you remember waking up when you first had that little nudge inside your chest, inside your stomach, that little something that goes, that said, this isn't right, but I don't know how, why, what? You know, just this, you just kind of like move away from it. You're like, ugh, you don't even go there. And then over time, it just gets worse and worse. I heard a woman the other day talking about knowing, finally getting away. I mean, literally getting away from a very severe abuser. And for a while, but some little quirk of fate, some little quirk of the judicial system caused her to have to interact with this person again after many years. And the person was not involved in the children's lives at all for many years. And boom, they're back. And as much as the resolve was not to get involved, don't let them in again, they were forced to, and so that brought them back, and then boom, the hook. And even though she could see the hook, she could see it, and she wanted to believe it, she knew. And she, immediately, as soon as she let down those boundaries a little bit, little by little, that abuse came back. So these are the kinds of things we want to help us see and be so okay in ourselves. Be the kind of person inside. We talked about Saint Paquita. We talk about Joan of Arc. We talk about so many. I mean, we could go on and on and on. Women who were so meek and humble and suffered a lot, but yet they ended up, it's almost like that was old rotting clothes that fell away as it's a phoenix from the ashes, as the self, not the new self. Now, God can make all things new, but you are the new thing that comes out is really you. It's a you that was knitted together and stars and awesomeness and electricity and all kinds of great things that you needed to be. And those great things aren't measured by our world. They're just you being you, because he knows exactly where you need to be. So we were talking about the outburst of anger, the displaced anger, where you actually, you know, maybe your elderly mother calls or something, and you just get really angry at some little irritating thing that they've always done or always said. Displaced anger. Also, the different outbursts of irritation, anger, somebody that cuts you off or somebody at the store, you're always kind of in this heightened sense of anxiety, ready to go, ready to pop, the just a heightened sense, just kind of like always a little bit like you've got a little buzzing noise going on in you. Or you could be using self-pity or false humility or blaming others. And you can blame them in order to manipulate. And that can be another problem. Or sometimes the humility, the long suffering, that can be a different form. But again, they're coping mechanisms. It's not saying that anyone's bad who does these. It's coping against abuse. You have sometimes people make themselves small. If I get small enough, they won't hurt me. And that can be left over from watching someone be victimized or being victimized yourself. Now, I'm not going to go straight from there to forgiveness, because forgiveness is a hard thing, isn't it? It's really difficult, because once you start getting triggered again, it's hard to forgive. But here's what we have to understand, is it may not feel, it's an exercise, it's an action, it's a motion, it's a working out. And again, I'm going to emphasize before we close, because this is our last segment. Part of what I do here is to alert, educate, open eyes, show a different way of looking at the very same thing that's all around, you read all about all the time. At the same time, I'm advocating, but let's name it. But don't get mired in it. Don't let it suck us back down. Don't go back to that graveyard. But if you run from it all the time, if you keep closing those doors, or you numb yourself out, or you overeat, or you overdrink, or you overvolunteer, or you over sit in adoration all day long, or you just don't look at this, you're not being who you need to be. And that's not going to serve you. Because this will have its day of reckoning. And you will maybe one day look back and say, you know what, I sure wasted a lot of years. Or my children, you see the evidence in the children of being in this kind of situation where there's a huge elephant in the room, and the elephant's pretty evident to them inside themselves. And you see the evidence in how they pick their mates. And one day you think, oh my gosh. So it's all about self-awareness, but to the point where you're going to be growing and developing that stuff in you. So I said I would get to this. I'm going to just name it, and then we're going to have to wait for tomorrow. But this Enright process of psychological forgiveness. Now, the Enright process, there was a gentleman named Robert Enright, and he's very religious. At the same time, psychologically speaking, this is completely for all human consumption, because it does kind of outline a nice, concise way. And he puts forth that there are four phases of forgiving. So the process of forgiving proceeds in four phases. It's almost like the stages of grief. You're just seeing that this is the kind of how you'll get to. You can't make yourself you can't force one phase over another. However, being aware can help, because it gives you permission. We think we have to go straight from remembering the offense to forgiving, and we can't do that, and it's unrealistic. So the uncovering is phase one, where you actually uncover. Again, name it. You gain insight. I'm quoting now, Enright. You gain insight into whether and how the injustice and subsequent injury occurred and how they have compromised his or her life, your life. So it involves confronting the nature of the offense, uncovering the consequences of having been offended. Now, that is number one. How can you just blanketly forgive if you don't understand it? If you don't have to like dive in to understand every tiny little baby motivation and whatever happened from then, but just to be able to name it. A lot of us refuse to name the fact that we were harmed by our mother or our father. We don't understand that we can do that. We don't even know that we aren't doing it. It can be that deep. And I don't want to leave you with being a little too vague. So the next phase is the decision phase, that you gain an accurate understanding of the nature of forgiveness, and you make a decision to commit to forgiving on the basis of this understanding. Now, that were his words, but the way I read this, that hereafter, you have to go through phase one. You have to be able to get to a certain point where your legs are strong enough where you can start to walk a little bit, one step. So first you have to name it, and you have to claim it, and not claim it like you were at fault, but name it, that this really did happen. Doesn't mean I hate them, or that I love them less. It confuses me. It's sad. I have to mourn it. It's really bad. It hurts, but I'm not going to numb out. I'm not going to do all those little reset button things. And then after that has gone, and you need some help going through this, I want to add that. Again, counselor would be great. Recovery groups, trusted priests, trusted friends. Decision phase then would be that number two. And I'll just say the other two before we close, the work phase and the deepening phase. So we have the uncovering phase, the decision phase, the work phase, and the deepening phase. And we get into that decision phase. It's like when they tell you about getting into marriage. Why can you have a marriage annulled? There are many reasons, but one of the reasons is that you didn't understand all the information that was necessary to make a good decision. You didn't have all the faculties, or you didn't have all the facts. And if you were harmed or traumatized and you've numbed out, or you use all these other defense mechanisms, and you've just in your mind felt you just shut the door on that a long time ago, can't tell you how many people, how many strippers I've come in contact with over the years as a doctor who say, yeah, well, I had all these other things happen to me, but it doesn't bother me. I just have anger issues. Doesn't bother me. I already dealt with all my traumas. Well, after a little while, they find out, no, they haven't. So we're going to get into those tomorrow, but ponder on those phases a little bit today, because there is such great wisdom in these things. I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you tomorrow.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.